It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to Learning to Listen, aka L2L podcast. Yeah, this is a podcast where we're listening to stuff, we're learning about it. It's not a biography show, so if you tuned in thinking we're going to know every little minutia about your favorite artist, we don't know shit about shit.
Wrong place.
We listen to something and we react to it, and we try and figure out what, in this case, our guest was thinking, feeling when they heard this for the first time. And today's guest is Chris Owaniuk. We're going to be talking all about the Mahavishnu Orchestra's second album, Birds of Fire. But before we do that, of course, we're going to ask you to once again join us at patreon.com/learningtolisten. I mean, listen, this is where you get all the real hot goss, okay? Like, if you want to really, really, really hear about how much Naomi wants to know about butt plugs and cock rings.
Hold on. You could say you'll get such hits as
I love girth.
And also
being moist all the time would be a problem.
Yeah, there's only one place to get that stuff, and that is
quality content.
Exactly. patreon.com/learningtolisten. Throw us a few bucks, help us keep this thing going. You know, like, what else are you gonna spend that thing on? You know, like a dollar store cock ring? I don't know. Where do you get your cock rings?
Not a dollar store. Where are you getting your cock rings, bro?
That's my mistake. Maybe I gotta find a new place to get cock rings. All right, well, we're off to a hell of a start.
Costco, by the way. Costco's got some big deals on
You get them in by the dozen.
Kirkland cock rings aren't to be fucking laughed at now.
There's a whole aisle just of cock rings.
They're just as good as the other name brands.
All right. Well, of course, joining us every day, every time, every time we do this, we got DJ Charlie's. I can't talk right now. My mouth is just so full of hot goss. Charlie Scream, what do you got going on? Yeah. Naomi Carmack, our 90s nostalgia expert.
Oh, hello.
My name is Quinn. You guys know me. And like I said earlier, we've got our guest with us today, Chris Owaniuk, tattoo artist, musician. How's it going, man?
Good, man. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing all right, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, you know, we were just talking earlier. We are 2/3 vaccinated, so first round. We got that discount one though. Speaking of like dollar store,
no designer drugs for us.
Yeah, the AZ, the Astra.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zeneca or whatever. You know,
but
did you guys get beat up by that thing at all?
Yes. Hell yes.
Right?
Did you get it?
Fucking
my ass
leveled out.
Huh? Yeah. I mean, not as much.
Yeah, I've got a theory because Charlie's got like these old man pills he has to take.
That's true.
That I think they just mitigate, like, because like what do old people feel like all the time, right? Like, shit. Yeah,
I already feel like garbage all the time. So,
so how would you know the difference? You're like, well, you guys don't feel like this all the time.
This is just I just call this Tuesday.
Speaking of Charlie here, you come to us by way of Charlie. Apparently you've been drawn on him lately.
Hey, for the people in the Twitch stream, you can see this.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. You get some new color in there?
Yeah, I was gonna ask if that was you. Nice one.
That was me. I love petting orange in people.
It's great.
So like how has business been? Have you been able to survive so far?
It's about as fucking awesome as it is for everybody else. Like, you know, I mean, that's the thing, like it's with creative work too, right? So, I mean, that's kind of one of the things I've been talking about with some of my clients. Like, you only work 2-3 months at a time and then you're off for another 2 months, right? Like, and all these people start hitting me up and it's like, oh, well, let's talk about my tattoo. And I'm like, dude, how fucking creative do you think I am right now? Like, I'm watching the entire world get shut down outside, you know? It's been tough. It's been weird. It's been kind of up and down, kind of week to week, really, you know.
Well, yeah, because you're put in this weird tier with like spas and salons and all that sort of stuff, right? So it must be interesting that you're like, okay, are we allowed to go get a haircut? great, I can work this week.
Right? And yeah. I am so not necessary. Like, at all.
What are you talking about? This was super necessary.
I mean, everyone has had like this kind of like a little bit of like a harsh kind of YOLO sort of fucking quality happening with all of them right now too. You know, a lot of people have been kind of sitting around going, you know, if I'm going to do it, now's going to be the time, because sat around and watched the entire world kind of go for about a year.
Yeah. So yeah, it's got to be a combination too of like, all right, facing my mortality a little bit. You know what I never did? Got that fucking tattoo I always wanted to get.
Right.
Be free time on your hands where you're like, well, what am I going to do? Sit around the TV and watch Nancy Grace all day? Like, you know?
So, and the thing for me is that a lot of my clients and a lot of the stuff that I do is like large scale work, right? Well, fucking who knows what the hell is going to be happening in 6 weeks, let alone 6 months from now, right? So, you know, you end up putting in like what would end up being as normal, like a week to like a week and a half, and like drawing out the back piece or something like that, right? Normally, you end up like booking like a fucking year's worth of appointments, and now I'm like, oh, I'll book like one or two, like, cool. See you later, man. You know, but whatever, it's how it goes. I mean, the plus side is that the social aspect of the shop is a fucking huge saving grace right now, for sure. You know, it's a very open environment. You know, you can kind of speak your mind freely and not have to worry too much about anything happening to you. Not that there's anything fucking radical happening there at all, but you know.
No, I know what you mean. Like, I've noticed with friends and acquaintances and whatnot, I find the people who are the most isolated are the ones who are getting the weirdest. You know what I mean? Like, it's the people who leave the house.
Sorry, I'm leaving guys. Now.
Yeah, Naomi's right. She's sitting right there. She can hear you.
Wasn't gonna name any names, but
the cracks are starting to show a little bit broader per day.
But it's important for mental health, like to socialize.
Oh, dude, it's huge. Absolutely, it's huge.
I just drink more.
Yeah, that's good for your mental health too. I've been told.
Yeah, my liver's thanking me.
But I mean, like, when people wonder how like all these boomers have been so radicalized and start buying into QAnon, it's like, well, you left them home with Facebook and Fox News all day. What did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. Like, well, man,
they need to go in the real world.
They're people that we know. They're not very smart.
it's like, I just like, but the same thing too, I gotta say, like, it's not even just the QAnon side of things, it's everybody, right? Like, everybody just gets wrapped up in their isolated little world, and whatever neuroses they have in the first place are just being exacerbated like tenfold, right?
We have a question
from watchers.
What tattoo shop does Chris work out of?
I work at Urge 2 Tattoo in south side of Edmonton.
Nice.
South side.
You ever just consider just like overnight painting the high level bridge camo so that Northsiders can't find their way to the south side? Or that's an old joke, by the way. Anyway, I'm in Westmount. You know, I can. If this is considered the north side, then this is pretty cool for the north side. All right, man. Well, let's get into the album talk. So, you know, Charlie brought you the question, and I know it's not an easy question to answer. Kind of nebulous. Like, you know, there's a lot of music, a lot of albums that influence people, especially when they're young. But the album you picked, Birds of Fire, it's the second studio album by jazz fusion band Mahavishnu Orchestra. From January 3rd, 1973, Columbia Records. And it was their last studio album before they broke up for a little while and then eventually got back together. And then we're on and off again, and, you know, like Ross and Rachel. But anyway, here's the big...
When I think jazz fusion, I think Ross and Rachel. That's 100%.
My brain goes right to Friends every
time.
Oh, God,
I'm such a fucking nerd. I want to be all like, okay, yeah, it started off as like a Ross and Rachel, but then it kind of turned into like... fucking Ross and some other chick later on. What was the name of the English chick? What the hell was her name?
I don't know, because Ross called her
Julie.
Rachel. So
it was Julie.
Emily.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Right. Okay. So right, like there is like this other thing that happens in it, but it's kind of shitty and you don't really want to talk about it too much. So you only talk about like the one that everyone really cares about.
Right. So we'll focus on this one. We'll focus on the Rachel of their albums.
Absolutely. Yeah. They kind of went like this weird, like 80s kind of terribleness. And it was so bad.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll have to admit right off the bat, like, this is definitely probably one of the more niche albums that we've done. Good. You know, like, so here's the first question. It's always the first question. Mm-hmm. Why this album?
You know what? The funny thing is, my house growing up, it was kind of like fucking Utah, you know, like I knew there was music. Mm-hmm. I just never really heard it. You know, like it just wasn't really around. Like, okay. We had radios and stuff like that. Like there's still shit like 4 o'clock rock was just starting to pick up when I was a kid and that kind of stuff too. Right. Because this is, you know, early 80s. And, but I'd go through the record collection that they had and, you know, it was pretty small. Like there wasn't a whole hell of a lot to it, but there was some really weird stuff. You know, yeah, the unanimous scurry.
Thrift store, right? Your old favorite, Nathan Scurry.
Right. There was some other super cheesy piano shit. Like it's just
Mills?
Typical. You know, like
I'll bet you there was a Smothers Brother album
stuff,
in there,
right?
For sure.
Sounds like my mom's record collection.
Sounds like, you know, all right? Our mom's record collection.
Pretty much, and that's all that there was. But then there was like one Johnny Paycheck song or one Johnny Paycheck album.
This is my mom's record collection.
Right. And then for whatever reason, just this one fucking jazz album. And years later, I'm kind of thinking about it. I'm like, did someone convince my dad and like, did he get tricked into buying this at some point in time? Like someone played a bad joke on him and like, fuck, now I got this album. All right. Well, I'll just put it in the shelf. And I'll
like, he thought he was
later.
Buying an Eagles greatest hits.
I don't really know. Right. But like, it's such an oddball, like you said, and to have that be the only jazz album that you have in your entire house.
Yeah.
That's weird. You know, that's what it was. That's all that I had. Right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and you listen to it and it starts off like, okay, cool. And then kind of like, okay, it's kind of like fucking smashing a couple of plates against each other. Like it's a really cool couple of plates, but it's very aggressive. There's a lot happening to it. There's a lot of sounds. There's a lot of sonic room is being used up by everybody. And, unfortunately, due to that, I would never really get further than like that first half of the album for fucking years and years and years. You know, it wasn't until I grew up a little bit later and started getting into stuff like Primus and that kind of shit back in the early 90s and started getting into a little bit more of like a prog metal kind of thing. And they're like, oh, well, what's this thing? You know, and like there is like that little bit of a crossover, right? It was just this fascinating quality about not just the album on its own, but just the way that it starts out. Again, like it's not really shrill, but it's not really awesome at the same time. Like it's just like this weird fucking like moving cacophony of notes, right?
Yeah, the word I would probably use would be like discordant, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a clash of everything from like that first song, the very first song, which is called Birds of Fire, I believe, right?
Birds of Fire off of Birds of Fire.
Yeah. It creates this tension that starts.
Yeah.
And it goes through almost the entire record. But the first thing that happens is that everybody's playing in different time signatures. And it's a little mathematical in the way it works because there are points in each person's playing that like they do come back together, but mm-hmm. it's never in that like satisfying way where it's like, and now we're all, you know, performing the same lick and the same, it's all synergistic. It's like, you just get a brief moment of like, okay, mathematically this is working out. And then they're back into like whatever their thing is.
Right. It's like watching the DVD thing bounce around and like it almost gets stuck to the corner, like bink, like, ah, oh, it's so close.
Yes.
Yeah, and it, I think it's definitely meant to, like, well, I don't know what their thinking was for sure, but the impression I got was that they're like, they wanna build this, like, kind of tension, you know, that I think that the idea is, like, there's a sense of madness to everything that's going on, and your brain wants to figure it out. If you can, like, if you really sit down and start to, like, try and put it together, but it never gives you that what's the word I'm looking for, like, that
resolution.
Payoff. Yeah, resolution. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And that comes much later in the album. But before we get into all of that, like, so yeah, at some point that you are drawn back to this record, right? So there must have been a point where you're like just going through your parents' records to be like, what's cool? And you're like, oh, Nanum Scurry. I mean, girls in cat's eyes, like, glasses are pretty hot, you know?
none of the hits were on there, though, man. Like, it was like B-sides, right? Yeah. It was like the Christmas album or some shit like that. So I did end up going back to it, like I said, back in it around the 90s. It was one of those things that kind of like always kind of like, oh yeah, I mean, there's that thing, I forgot about that, and kind of break it out. And, you know, and if you're sitting around with your friends and you smoke a joint or something like that back in the 90s, you're like, fucking check this out. You put that on, you're like, whoa, my God. But then I started getting really into music, and I actually ended up going into jazz college. And, but, you know, at that point in time, there really wasn't a whole lot of time and effort really spent on anything outside of, like, your standard, like, jazz and, like, bebop, maybe, like, some Afro-Cuban stuff. But it wasn't, like, a whole lot of, like, really fusion stuff because, again, this would have been, like, 96 or 97 or something like
where
that, right?
Where were you going to school? Grant Mac?
This is at Grant McEwen. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was in that program in 2000.
Nice. What'd you take?
Oh, my major was vocal performance, but I also I only finished one semester because I ran out of money.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Was it still at the JP campus then too?
It was in the Orange.
Yeah. Oh man, I missed that building. Yeah. So
it wasn't an orange building. It was actually the correct color was apricot brandy. Because I was a graphic design student there, so that's why I know that.
Was that on a test or something?
They were like... brandy. Yeah, but like I said, so my bass instructor, when I first met this guy, again, like, this is like, you know, mid-90s, right? And I was this old fucking ruffian kind of type guy, and I'm like, ah, Chili Peppers and Primus are the shit, right? And this guy fucking stops in. And first of all, he's playing this bass, a 6-string bass, right? Like, the thing was like that fat, like, it was huge. And he played so high up, he actually had to take the strap off, and he'd fucking like, and he'd put it on, he'd be like playing like up here. And I'm like, oh man. Like,
you're like, so what you really want is a guitar.
Right, you know?
Yeah.
6-string, you're playing an octave higher. Right. Like, that's a guitar.
You know the type of guy that I'm talking about.
Yes, I know,
right?
Exactly.
Like,
the type
of guy. Super nerdy fusion dude, just like playing that yuppie fuck jazz until the cows come home.
Don't all musicians play their instrument up high like that?
I'm sorry?
Don't they teach us in music school to hold our instruments high like that? You know,
like, man, they really, really did try. They really tried. Like, but like, go higher, higher. I'm like, why?
No, like, but when you've seen the song purpose? Remains the Same when you were 14 years old, like after your first bong rip, there's no being like, this is cooler for sure, right?
They are not training you to be rock stars there.
Right?
Lower and lower is the way to go.
Any Soundgarden video. I mean, like, shit, that dude, he's so two straps together to play that bow. It's fantastic. Anyways, yeah. So, you know, so it was pretty cheesy sort of stuff there that they wanted us to kind of get into, which is a bit of a shame because you kind of like blew past like so much of like that Motown stuff, which had been awesome to kind of stop and pay a little bit more time and respect to as a bass player. Not to mention like the entire 70s funk line, like Bootsy Collins and fucking
Just, yeah, George Clinton, everybody. Parliament.
And everybody. George Clinton, Parliament, Funkadelic. Like, you get into all, like, the weird stuff that was coming out of Florida. You get into some of the shit that was coming out of Detroit. Like, there's this shit happened that was everywhere, right? But you just skip all by that stuff and get right into playing Afro-Cuban.
Yeah. Which is interesting, though, because, okay, so... Like, so you're going to music school or whatever, and you're hanging out with, like, yeah, these, like, fusion nerds and stuff. And so that must have been some street cred for you to be like, I've been listening to, like, the Mahavishnu Orchestra since I was a kid.
Didn't care. They didn't even care.
Really?
Didn't even care. No one even, like, started dropping any of these names and that kind of stuff. So then I started piecing stuff together, like, years later. Because, again, like, we didn't even really have that much internet back then either, right? So you wouldn't have, like... really looked anything up, right? But then you're like, holy shit, Jan Hammer was in the Mahavishnu Orchestra, and that was the dude that went and created the entire sound of Miami Vice.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like,
okay.
And he's all over that album, and he fucking slays on that album. You know?
I did.
And then weird shit like Rick Laird, the bass player on that album too. Like, he went off into doing like a lot of bass instruction. And one of the books that I actually had when I was in college was one of the ones from him. And I'm like, well, fuck. Like, that would have been perfect. And I would have been like, totally, man, I've been listening to these guys for so long. But again, no one really cared about the Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Yeah, well, I've got to admit, like, I really this is a name I've heard out there in the wild before, but it's not a band I have ever listened to, and not because I avoided it. It's just nobody's been sitting around going like, dude, you listen to this and put it on. Like, it never happened, not once. Like, I don't know about Charlie and Naomi. Like, what's your guys' experience? Is anything you were familiar with or
never heard of it?
No,
now I have.
Yeah, this is kind of why this is some of my favorite things that we do, though, is that
that's why we do this show.
Bring these kind of things in, and it, you know, like, I got to admit, yeah, it is. But like, just like you said, this album, it starts off going like, challenges you to listen to it.
Yeah.
And man, I'm up for a challenge, right? That's what I like, is being like, all right, you know, like, let's get into it. Let's hear something I've never heard before and see what I can get out of it.
I think tonally, like, it is. A little bit more accessible for the average listener compared to some other jazz stuff. Whereas like the dissonance that they create and that Mahavishnu Orchestra, like you said, is like, it's like that polyrhythmic kind of thing. Right.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of get like, this guy's kind of doing this and this guy's kind of doing this thing. And every now and then they kind of like get together and do this cool thing. Right. Whereas with some other, like more of like an intensive, like, authentic jazz, right? You know, that dissonance is going to end up being like within like the chord structure or something like that. And you get like these really weird angular chords kind of like thrown out, or like the chord progression has like that really weird or like interesting kind of fucking left-hand turn halfway through it or something like that. And that doesn't really happen anywhere on that album. Like, it's all really kind of like, not necessarily droning, but like the key signatures aren't really like, they aren't really all over the place. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I noticed that so I guess the idea was to fuse like Indian jazz apparently with some elements of like Western rock and even a little funk. And what I noticed, which was interesting, is that so John McLaughlin, he's the guitar player, right?
Yeah.
And he's the guy who started the band, and he was a dude backing up Miles Davis. And you definitely hear some Miles Davis, and even the second song is like a tribute to Miles Davis that has a few references to some of the stuff I'm sure he played a bunch of with Miles. But what I noticed, though, is it would be interesting in the first track is you hear like all these things going on, but the guitar is pretty much in like a pentatonic.
Yeah.
He's playing rock guitar. He's playing kind of
has like this almost like a Hendrix-y kind of vibe.
In some spots,
like
for sure.
Right?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so I could see where this is the fusion of the jazz fusion, is him being like, oh, but by the way, I'm just going to noodle like Hendrix licks over. over your, I'm not sure that he ever quite has the natural type of chops. He might just be too much of a music nerd to kind of reach those like the instinctual kind of like levels of flow that Hendrix could get into on stage, right? Also, Hendrix just had tone like for days, but
and so much drugs.
Yeah, maybe these guys are lacking the drugs. They're like, this stuff is hard to count. Like,
yeah,
I gotta keep sober enough to count. Or maybe it was the opposite. Maybe it's a ton of, but like that's what surprised me is that sometimes I'm like, this guitar is just so simple, like blues pentatonic.
and you should see the guitar that he was playing for the whole thing too, because it was a double neck he was rocking all the time too, right?
I went and looked up a bunch of videos because I was like, I wonder how this translates to a live performance. And I found that it wasn't that the live performance
did you see his white jumpsuit?
Yes. So, but what I found was interesting though, I was like, I don't think that like this is a good representation, because I'm like, I know for a fact I would get a different experience if I was actually in a crowd. I don't think it translated well to television, especially 70s television. The sound mix is all off, or at least the copies that you can find now. I'm like, this is not working. Like, you can't hear the
show. They show them all tuning by ear ahead of time and that kind of shit.
Yeah, and just the things like the drums weren't coming through the mix, and so I was like, this isn't working. But I don't think the fault of the band, but I don't know, maybe the experience of a television audience in 73 when they're watching some shitty little, like, you know, 12 inch screen with one mono speaker,
right?
You know, it's like, this is kids aren't ready for this. There must have been some nerds out there though that were like, this is it, this is the stuff. It's a crazy album to get into. But, you know, I listened to some of the music that you've got up you've got a bunch of tracks out on SoundCloud. I don't know if you've got music out anywhere else. I could see a bit of the influence. And if I had to pick anything, like, obviously it's not the same, but like one thing that this album just throws out the window is like traditional song structure.
Yeah.
Like that's gone. Like there's no verses, choruses. They don't even really riff even, you know, like,
yeah.
And I don't mean that in like, you know, like Black Sabbath riffs. I mean, like they don't establish like any kind of melodic riff and then work off
there's
of that.
There's not a lot of like cyclical shit that happens. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Sometimes they're repetitive, but that's to a whole different effect.
It's not like that stoner jam band kind of riff and repetitiveness, but it has like that kind of vibe to it. Like it's really bizarre.
Yeah.
I'm glad I made y'all listen to it.
would you say that this like that had that kind of influence on you, or am I just talking out my ass?
No, it absolutely did. You know, an awful lot of the sounds and a lot of the tones that I fucking love, that I always want to end up like creating and give me that inspiration, are all 70s inspired stuff anyways, right? Like just big fuzzy shit, just lots of sound moving that air, you know, but it always that 70s aesthetic. There's something so simple as that, that little filter kind of peeking through everything too. And
yeah, like I'm listening with intention, and that's kind of part of the idea here. Like, you know, I forget to do it, but we're trying to get this hashtag that we use to go in, called engaged listening, because you know, it's like you have to listen or you don't. You know what I mean? Like this is an album I had to pay attention to. I couldn't just put it on in the background and get anything from it. That's just not how it's going to work, right? Like,
yeah.
If anything, it's just not going to work that way. It was like I had to be like, all right, headphones on, like try and figure out what everybody's doing, different parts or whatever. So I like, you know, man, it's definitely engaging on that level. You know, there's no lyrics or anything, so you got to like try and get an impression of the mood that they're trying to establish just like solely from those musical expressions, right?
Yeah.
And I think for the most part it's pretty effective, except that like it really is the whole time very like the it just builds tension and without very much resolution, you know. But every once in a while there's a moment or two on this record that is like, oh, or this is just the Meters with like you know, some classical or some like, you know, like Indian, like over top of it.
Yeah, every now and then it gets like this little weird groove, and yeah, like you said, it's like I like that real solid, like four on the floor kind of fucking meters kind of vibe to it, you know? But again, it's got like that 70s kind of aesthetic to it, you know? Like it just that bizarre fucking quirkiness stuff, but then kind of funneling down at that one point.
Yeah, I think, where did I say that? I said that for Miles Beyond. I made a note here, and that's the second track in, and that's the one that's referencing Miles Davis, obviously. But then I wrote this down where I was like, oh, classical / jazz played over the meters. Right? And it was like, yeah, man. And I'm like, you know, it's weird because I'm like, there's kind of two different songs going on here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like at the same time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, super interesting. And then of course there's stuff like, and this is where if I had to say there is any kind of anything that's super similar between like the stuff you're that I like I've listened to of yours, they had that, it's just like a 30-second interlude called like Sapphire Bullets of Pure Love. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's just everybody making noise on their instruments for like 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Nothing happens. It just like they just. Right? I don't know if like that's obviously intentional. Like you won't put that on the record because you're like just you know like.
Oh, could you imagine being in the studio that day though, right? And getting everybody together, like, okay, so what are we gonna do? Well, we're gonna make some fucking noise for this long, but it needs to be within this. There was a discussion about that, right? Like, you know, it is bits like that that you don't really think about. You don't really consider it that much nowadays, you know, but considering back in, it was what did you say?
73 when the album came out. Yeah.
Right. You know, like recording shit like that would have been like, they have to do that all live. Like that was like probably like one take and like, okay, let's make this happen.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you're really going to get that interaction. Right.
Yeah. Did they reproduce like that track live ever like exactly that way? Or, you know, is that something you could rehearse? Or was the point of that the opposite to be like, okay, this is something you can't rehearse. It's pure expression.
But I mean, and that's kind of the cool thing though too. Right. Like, I mean, you see dudes like, Medeski, Martin, and Wood, they would have moments like that where just like, and he gets up and he like walks around the kit and he's just playing weird shit and they're just making a bunch of noise. But then all of a sudden it goes 2, 3, 4 and they're back into it. You're like, oh, okay. Like, you know, from the listener's standpoint, like it does sound like a bunch of noise, but like, you know, it's noise, but you know, within that confines of knowledge, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a couple of conversations I want to have about this. I want to find out from these guys first, though. Okay. So, Charlie, like, I know you must have gotten through this album.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Did you listen to it more than once? Just get one spin through it?
I got through it twice. I got through it the first time I listened to it. I put the headphones in. And I got on the treadmill and I was like, okay, I'll just walk through this and, you know, then I can, you know, zone out and just like, you know, get into it. Right. And then like right off the bat with Birds of Fire, I thought it was funny because I was like walking faster, like, you know, like it was just so frenetic and so, you know, tension, so much tension. I just found myself walking faster and faster. But I find like, I think getting through that one, it kind of gets into like, that's the big, hey, this is what it is. And then after that, it kind of chills out a bit in a way, in a manner of speaking, right?
Yeah. It telegraphs a little bit.
Yeah.
It's almost like the like parental advisory warning on the front of the, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then like, maybe just because it was like rock guitar from the 70s, but I kept going in my mind. I'm like paying attention, listening, doing the engaged listening. First off, yeah, mind blown. I was like, okay, holy shit, this is great. But I just kept going back to like, this would have been a great soundtrack for like the 1969 Spider-Man cartoon.
Oh, dude, okay, I made that exact same. I am. By the way, we did not compare notes. I tell these guys and save it for the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, so there's a song on here called Sanctuary. Though,
right?
Yeah, totally.
It's like the second or third last song.
One for me, one word was the track that's like for sure. That's a 70s cop car chase. where like where they drive through boxes in an alley and they go everywhere, and I'm just like, this is great, this is brilliant. I love this. Like I want this movie to happen, right? I want to see the movie with this chase in it.
Yeah. So the song Sanctuary, I made that note. I was like, this is the soundtrack from the 66 Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah, 66 Spider-Man, whatever. For sure.
But like, that's the, I think 66. I just made that note. I could be lying.
68.
You could be
68
right.
68 or 69?
68 maybe? I don't know. Either way, but you know what? Yeah, but we've listened to that. Like, there's a band, what were they called? The album they put out was called The Amazing Spider Band or whatever.
Yeah, Volume.
Volume. And because they never got the proper licensing for it, it's out of print or whatever, but it's the only band that's ever gone and like put out a commercial version of all the music from the Spider-Man cartoon.
Oh, that's so great.
The old school KLM or whatever.
Yeah,
that stuff's so cool.
And it's so cool. And there are definitely elements of that kind of like that kind of just swinging 60s cool jazz.
Mm-hmm.
They really
I did one of the songs from that fucking 60s Batman or Spider-Man cartoon when I was in college.
Awesome.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Too.
But so before we get too far off track, Naomi, how did you fare listening to this record? Because I know this is not your jam.
This is not my wheelhouse at all. Dissonance seems to make me uncomfortable, and that's my issue. Like, I mean, I was listening to it, but I couldn't feel like I could completely relax while listening to it. I kind of need sounds to be put into their places, like mathematically and such. And I just, it's a difficult journey for me.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I don't think this is for everybody.
No.
Like we were saying before, very niche. You just used the word uncomfortable, and I hadn't considered it before, but now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I think part of like the point of this album is to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure, 100% right off the bat, the first track. If I would have been casually listening or like, you know, I found this and I was like, oh, let's check this album out, right? It might have lost me there, you know, because that kind of like, I like jazz, but it gets to a certain point and I'm like, okay, this is too jazz. Just dial it, reel it in a little bit, buddy, you know, like.
Otherwise,
you know, powering through that was what got me into like just getting through that into the rest of the album. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Right.
I'm really big into different chords, progressions and different types of structure that way, but I need things to go back to tonic and I need
I get it though. Like I appreciate good songwriting. I appreciate song structure. Yeah. I feel like in this, you know, the point of this though is like I don't think it ever came off as pretentious. Which a lot of jazz has the problem, like, you know, I know a lot of people just hate jazz on principle, but like that's such a weird thing to say because what are you talking about? Are you talking about Dixieland jazz from like the fucking turn of the last century?
Sometimes I associate jazz with the people who play it more so than the music itself.
Oh, dude, 100%. That's exactly.
Have you ever been to like Yardbird or something?
Yeah. Fuck, I think that is like probably the hardest part about getting anyone into jazz is getting them past everyone else who already fucking plays jazz.
Man. It's funny. Usually usually it's the band you hate or like, you know, not their fans, but so like, you know, in a weird way, I would say like mission accomplished, right? Like if you're trying to alienate or maybe that's not their goal to alienate, but you know, you know that by trying to create attention and like making people feel uncomfortable, like you're going to alienate people, like you have to at least be aware of that in some level. If you're not, like I couldn't imagine what kind of egomaniac you'd have to be to like, this is genius and everybody will see that, right? Like no man, like we've got the Beach Boys, like the other conversation I wanted to have about that goes hand in hand with all that is like, how important is genre?
No, not at all.
I was like, did he just freeze right on that?
You did. You froze right on that beat. You said, how important is genre? Boom.
Oh, well, perfect. That's because, okay. I caught myself freezing there. So the last thing I did say was that. And then I said, did I freeze? This is called Jazz Fusion. And I guess the fusion part, like we were saying earlier, is like, oh, and we have, you know, mixed elements of like what contemporary music was at the time, contemporary rock and funk and maybe even a little R&B and whatever else, right? But, you know, like I heard Charlie talking earlier, we weren't talking about the record, but he mentioned like, hey, you guys getting ready for like a psychedelic record or whatever? And I was like, oh, I didn't hear psychedelic. Yeah, and Charlie's like, psychedelic jazz rock. And I'm like, I didn't hear psychedelic. I hear the jazz, I hear the rock, I didn't hear psychedelic. But to me, I'm like, but to me, psychedelic is like a specific genre.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what's the point of genre? Is like, do we need to have tropes in our listening preferences to be like, okay, this, I'm in this lane and I understand it? You know?
I use the same sort of comparisons when I'm talking about artistic styles, though, too. Right. Cause I mean, it's all fucking completely moot at some point in time, you know, where I think it gets into more the intent from who it's coming from than the way that you go on about doing it. I don't know. It's genre, I feel, is one of those things that a lot of musicians will pigeonhole themselves into, you know, and they'll be like, okay, well, if I'm going to be like making songs for people to listen to, they need to be within this genre because I understand that's what these people like, right? You're already going to be kidding yourself because you're already putting a limitation on what it is that you're going to be creating artistically. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you just kind of let it go and do its thing naturally, it'll happen on its own. Right. Like I see all these people starting out tattooing, you know, they're like, I'm going to do this. I'm like, okay, why don't you just kind of fucking figure out how to tattoo first and then figure all of it later on. Right. Like you don't sit down and like, I want to learn how to play guitar and I'm going to be the best country guitar player in the entire world. Like, well, don't you want to listen to anything else? You know? So, I mean, you know, I feel a lot of people should be a lot more open-minded about, well, fucking everything, but music and art alone. I mean, I think it's hilarious that music scares people. Like, I think it's honestly like hilarious that someone can hear something. They'll be like, oh my goodness, that they're like terrified about. It's a song. Right. Like, you know, again, it's that intent behind it. And if that's the intent that's scaring you, that's a completely different thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, when you get into the weird minutia of like of so-called genres and stuff like that, I always find like, you know, you get the spectrum. There's people who consider themselves purists and whatnot and, you know, of any form. And then maybe they even get snobby about it. I've definitely run into those types. I mean, go to any record store and, you know, like the game Charlie and I like to play with a couple of buddies of ours. We'll like get together and go record shopping or whatever. And it's kind of like, all right, who's going to walk out of here with actually getting a compliment from the like guy at the like counter, you know, the guy running the store or whatever, the employee of the record store actually goes like, oh yeah, cool pick. You know, you're like, yes, or got like, him.
This is a great album. And I'm like, thank you. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. But you know what, man, lots of swings and misses. So you pull a couple of records up there and you're like, all right, this is cool. Right. And like, and you just get that kind of like,
just like, all right,
is that everything for you today? And you're like, shit. Fuck.
That's me. That's what I get. I'm never told that like, it's cool.
I pulled the fucking most obscure, ridiculous record out of this place, and it's still cool. But anyway, I kind of sidetracked myself there. What I was going to say was, it's weird to me to think that, like, okay, so you're calling this a jazz fusion band. Do these guys run into that thing? Like, are there jazz fusion purists who, I don't know what a modern jazz fusion band would be. But like I don't know. Are there like, you know, maybe there's some like ambient noise bands that are playing these days, and some are like, this is nothing compared to the Mahavishnu Orchestra or whatever.
Right, there's some dude on Reddit somewhere just like, this is not real jazz fusion.
This is some phony pop bullshit, man. This is some fucking sellout radio, like. And I think what the whole reason I'm bringing that up is I'm like, I think that like the freedom of the expression that's on like this record and this band probably had. And they're all, that's the thing is, you know, you look at the pedigree and even at the time, some of these guys went on to be bigger deals, but it's not, they didn't end up in this band because, you know, they were just like busking on the street. Like they had resumes, you know, this guy's like, so I played guitar for Miles Davis, you know, like I pretty much have anybody I want in my band. And this is like some of the best musicians in the world get together and this is what they make. Right. And I think, you know, part of that is like just the freedom of expression, like I was saying before, is also that freedom to not really be able to label it anything. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I wanted to play around a few of these sounds and a few of those sounds and fuck it. Like, we'll call it jazz fusion, I guess.
And that's it. That's it, though, right? Like, and that's the freedom. The freedom is not giving a shit to begin with, right? And not giving a shit what somebody else thinks, what someone else's perception of what it is that you're making really is, you know? Mm-hmm. And the less that you give a shit what other people think about, the more of yourself that you kind of end up putting into some stuff, and the more pure that it is kind of becoming.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, man, there's a punk rock kind of element to it, right? I mean, it's a little lofty, and punk rock in its earliest inceptions, and for many years, was like the opposite of lofty. But just that idea of like, I'm just going to make the kind of noise I want to make, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, now, I mean, maybe this is on, like I said, the end of like, well, but we're all super talented, trained musicians. So this is what
still,
we do.
It's still a super ballsy endeavor though, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And then after that, like he ended up doing, they ended up doing something with Carlos Santana afterwards as well, I think. And then there was like another studio album when they ended up getting back together afterwards too. And
yeah, it's all very capable, very competent musicians. So yeah. That's what I mean. Like there's a song in here and I don't remember which one it is, if I made a note about it or whatever, where the bass only plays one note until the very last note of the song. Right?
Oh.
I can't remember which one it is. It's in the second half of the album though, but it's just the whole song just plays bop, 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 whatever time signature. And then it's the song is all like in some, I don't know, it's so hard to tell what key any song is in, but it's got a minor feel, I'll put it that way. And then the very last chord played by the entire band is one synergistic, actual, like real big, like, you know, harmonic chord. And that's the only time the bass changes. The whole time he just goes bop, bop, bop on one note, you know? But then I think there's a song on here called One Word.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a bit of the highlight of the record because it breaks everything up a little bit where it becomes a call and answer. Mm-hmm. Where so it lays down a groove and then they're still playing in like an off, like, or I shouldn't say off, but an odd time signature. And then everybody just kind of plays around. And it's the most, to me, like kind of jammy, you know, maybe late night, like, you know, jazz club kind of like showing off chops. But it's also a language I understand quite a bit, you know, from having been in these kind of places and seen these sort of thing where everybody kind of gets their turn. They're doing call and answer. And then there's a huge drum solo that slays.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the longest song on the track. And it comes like about roughly midpoint of the album ish.
Yeah. First song of side two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, okay, if there was a song that I had to be, you know, like, here's the one that's got the kind of broad appeal that like your average listener, your casual listener might understand, it would totally be that one.
Because, I wonder if that's why it's where it is on the album then.
Like it's almost like a reward for listening to the first side through and flipping the
right?
record over. Yeah.
Right. And then we'll put this one on there and they can actually understand it. Like, oh,
I mean,
okay.
Then for me, that's what I was saying. That's the track for me. That's more, most like a 1970s movie car, like cop movie car.
Yeah,
chase,
yeah, yeah.
Right. Like that's the one that just hit me. And I was like, oh yeah, I would put this on for sure.
Yeah, I made that note too, actually. In fact, I didn't just make that 70s movie / TV score, but I also made this extra note. That I've been, for some reason, like I haven't gotten into any specific artist or anything, but I've been listening to a few DJs who've been doing their thing online, you know, since the pandemic or whatever, a few YouTube channels. And I found this one guy, I can't remember what his channel is called, but the video he puts out are just called Coffee Breaks. And he has like guest DJs come on and they do all vinyl. And they always have a theme and they always like, they go really crate digging, man. They find deep cuts. And one guy came on and he did all what he called Japanese drama and original soundtracks. And ooh. I was into it, man, because it had that 70s flavor, but it also has that super technical Japanese, like, okay, we're not only going to learn how to play the genre, we're going to master it and be like, you know, we are the genre, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of being genre specific, like, if there's anybody we should be asking, it should be the Japanese, because they seem to like be able to like dissect that stuff. And I got a lot of that same feeling from that track too, is, so I put in brackets there, Japanese drama, because that's kind of what they called it. And I was like, but like Charlie was talking about Spider-Man earlier, just for shits and giggles, some of us have been getting together and watching old episodes of the Japanese Spider-Man.
Ooh.
Yeah. And like the soundtrack you hear on the Japanese Spider-Man, which is the 70s live action TV show,
totally.
It's got that feel.
Yeah.
It's got this like, it's got this disco funk to it, but it also makes you want to like, you know, it makes you want to watch like Shaft, like fucking chase down a pimp or something, you know,
like is this just because we all grew up watching Sesame Street and the Electric Company? Like, is this the fucking aftermath of it?
I maybe, man. I've been I just had a kid, so I've been going down the rabbit hole of old Sesame Street songs, and man, I gotta say, some of them were fucking just slap, just like a song like Put Down the Ducky.
Oh.
That's a jam and a half, guys. Like, I want to go do that song live. I want to like cover it. I'm just so like, oh, it's got a good hook. Yeah, it's groovy as all shit. So it is interesting, man, because there's 70s flavor all over this record, right? But it's almost in a weird way. It's like a little, I don't know. It's I don't know if ahead of its time is right to say. I feel like when I try and think about what this album sounds like, my brain can't really comprehend like all these like polyrhythmic and poly fucking scales. You know, but you know what I do hear in my head when I try and think about the sound of this album? I hear fucking Rush.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Like I hear Moving Pictures. I hear, I hear YYZ, you know, like
it's very indicative of the time that it was, right? You know,
well,
like,
Rush was probably a band in 73. I don't know when their first record came out.
No, but I mean, it was, you know, it had like, it was that piece of time though, right? Like when I think about Rush, like it's that same sort of aesthetic, it's that same sort of feel, it's that same sort of, you know, wearing a fucking Swedish kind of looking sweater inside of a log cabin because it's snowing outside, you know, like is everything just kind of like, you know,
yeah,
put on a fondue pot. And
I just mean like, I don't think Rush sounded like this when this sounded like this, but 5, 8, 10 years later, Rush sounded more like this. Like, you know, like, I'm wondering if maybe same thing, you know, like these records were showing up and they were drawn to them and they were like, oh, well, okay, maybe we play in the same key and time signature, but we could definitely lift a few of these licks. Like,
this is still one of those projects that like still not a lot of people really talk about though, you know, like it never really kind of came back and had like a moment in the sun, like, oh, remember these guys? Said no one. Like, just this, not really happening, you know.
Totally, man. Yeah, okay, like I don't know, I don't know if there's much else we can really talk about the music itself. I just wanted to, like, you know, they have this one song on here called Open Country Joy, which starts playing like some pretty genre specific country.
kind of
more of like a, at the time, kind of like all country rock, you know, what would have been like the alternative.
If it was like a cutscene for like maybe some sort of like weird shitty like TV show where they were like set off in the middle of nowhere, maybe putting up a cabin.
You mean like meanwhile back at the ranch?
It has a little bit of that effect.
Yes.
For sure, man.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
But it's definitely kind of more in a Birds kind of way, or like the kind of country stuff Zeppelin was kind of playing with around the same time, or a band like that, you know, like it's the kind of country a rock band would have made at the time.
Yeah.
But it still translates, you know, and it's weird because you're like, oh, but suddenly they're locked into such a, you know, like not to like downplay the like musicians of like country artists, you know, because there's some virtuosos for sure, but like this album goes from being so lofty in its like decisions and ideas and so discordant and ambient and all this tension, like, and this uncomfortable, and then all of a sudden it's like, and here we are, hoe down. Out of nowhere, it's second last track, and then the very last song called Resolution is the most synergistic. It's everything is, they're all tightly synced up. They're going up, like they're moving up the scale pattern where they're just like building it up. It's like the triumphant climax of a movie. And it's like all this tension you've been listening to for the last like 40 minutes or so. And then they're like, and then here it is. You're at the top of the mountain and you made it to the top of the mountain. And I'm expecting any moment they're going to turn this on its head. Here's going to be the artistic expression where it's like, and then it's just going to be like throw a piano down the stairs and record it or something. And no. It ends completely harmonious and melodic. And because
I gave up before then, what the hell?
Yeah. It's like all the tension of this whole album leads to this moment where it's like the big, like happy ending of a movie.
I guess I should finish it. Eh?
It legitimately finishes off like the narrative, right? Like that's the whole thing, is it starts off so crazy. And then slowly as it gets through it, it gets a little bit more and more accessible. And then at the end, it's just like,
it's the
and they
most
were no
accessible.
Longer little girls. Now they were little women, you know?
Yeah, it has a very, 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 like, the last song, it's called Resolution. It resolves. Like, it's you're like, oh my God, everything about this album is so thought out. And it didn't dawn on me until that moment that I'm like, the track listing 100% was like, no, it's got to go in this order. This song has to be here. This song has to be here. It's pure artistic expression. Like if there's anything else I could say about it, that's it, right? Like, you know, musically we could fucking talk in circles about it, but like we're never gonna like it's moving parts, right? So
it's
you never
so
lock
great.
It down. I'm sure there's music scholars out there who could tell us exactly like, okay, well he's referencing this this Indian composer from like, you know, 1890 or whatever, and then this riff is from a Miles Davis song from 1956 or something like that. Like,
yeah, right.
Great, you know, and it's like, but like I don't have that knowledge base, so I'm just purely reacting. So I guess when it comes around, you know, the thing is like, well, we talked a little bit about like the influence it had like on music you've made. Like, did it open you up to any other kinds of music? Did it just open doors for you musically, or?
No, it never really did, I don't think. You know, like it never really turned into anything else, right? Like it was always kind of like,
well, it sounds like a little, from what you were saying like, before when you're talking
like,
about
almost like a little secret that I had, you know, and right. I'd be like yeah, we'll check all this out, and they'd be like, do you guys want to listen to this? And be like, fuck no. And I'm like, okay, fine. You know, but every now and then I'd put it on and be like, oh, this is so cool. But
yeah, you know, but sometimes you need some of those things just for yourself too, right?
Yeah. Well, that's, and it's odd because I've listened to it so much, and I've been listening to it for so fucking long. I've been listening to it for over 40 years on its own, right? So when I listen to it, there's that familiarity to it, like, and I hear these riffs kind of pop up, like Birds of Fire right off the bat, right? Like I'm like, oh man, that's so great. Like it doesn't sound dissonant to me at all. Like for me, it's like coming home.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is I always try and give albums as many listens as not as many as possible, but like at least two good ones. Just my initial reaction, and I'll make some notes. And then normally like lyrics and things like that, there's no lyrics on this one, will be the second one. But this one was more about, okay, but like really try and listen to, you know, the tracks. Mm-hmm. Like put some distance between the players in my mind and try and understand. But, you know, it's not easy. But eventually this is what I had compared it to in my mind was like, go to a Shakespeare play and, you know, it takes a few minutes of them talking in that like iambic pentameter, before you start to feel, oh, there's a flow to the poetry here. And even if you don't understand the language, you start to get the intention behind the words, and that kind of translates the words for you. And I got that from this. You know, like, one initial listen through is like, okay, like, I'm, you know, I had a visceral reaction to it. But listening to it again, and now that I know what I'm in for, and I start, you know, like, being able to go like, okay, yeah, I there's an intention here that I understand. You know, now whether or not it's like, oh, am I going to throw this jam on at a party?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shit, yes. I just want to see their reactions.
Well, okay. Well, that's the last question. I mean, you kind of answered it, sort of. You say you keep it more for yourself, but like, you know, I always ask, does it hold up? It's like the last thing we kind of go over. And
Man, I've tattooed people to this album for sure. Like, and it's my world too, right? Like, I'm putting this on. You're going to deal with it. I really don't care what you think.
Cool, man.
And then, yeah. Nice. You know, but I mean, that's a different kind of setting though too, right?
Yeah. Like, are you going to be, okay, so, you know, we've all played in bands, and you know, the kind of the deal is, it's like driver gets to either pick who's picking the tunes, or they pick the tunes, right? It's like, driver gets to be like, all right, like, I'm up here, I'm watching the road, so like, what, like, and you know, sometimes people abuse that power. You know, it's their like couple of hours to just like, you know, maybe make somebody listening to a U2 album that they can't stand.
Like, I regret nothing. Zeropa all day, baby.
Zeropa is hot garbage. But you know, but I'm like, are you taking that kind of chance where you're like, I mean, maybe when you're tattooing people, you've got them kind of hostage for a few hours. Like,
where are they gonna go?
Yeah, where are they going?
That's just it, right? Yeah, you know, like, you're stuck with me for at least 6 hours anyway. So
yeah,
No, I would. I don't think outside of that setting, and I mean, that's only because it's a work setting for me, right? Like, for me, that's just work music. I'm just like, oh, sweet, I'm gonna fucking make something neat. But I would not put it on for like a road trip or like making breakfast.
No.
You know, maybe having a bath, I would for sure, but. Outside of that, no.
Well, what about you guys, Charlie? You were kind of jumping in there.
I think I'm into it. I don't know that I can play it for many people aside from, you know, like, if we're hanging out or something like that, right? But I'm gonna put it on my I put it on my record list. I'll find it. I'll throw it. Especially like I said, one word is amazing. I love it.
Yeah, Naomi.
I think I should listen to the last two songs and not give up.
Go back and listen to the second side. Yeah.
I'll come back to you guys with a report on it.
I love though that you didn't make it through their album. That's so awesome.
I tried. And like,
I know you did. And that's why great. I think it's great.
I was making dinner and I'm like, oh, I'm so uncomfortable.
Well, I had this thought about getting high and listening to this album. And then I was like, no way, man, this would make me more paranoid.
Oh no. It's so great. It's so great.
Like, yeah, like, is that the missing ingredient here? Maybe. And then I was like, no, fuck, I don't know, man. Like, there's so much tension, I just probably just get weirded out.
But that's what I ended up doing last night. I smoked a joint and sat down, started doing some work, and I threw that on, and I just got, I got lost, and it was like 2 hours later, and I'm like, ah, damn it.
Yeah. I think for myself, I am going to revisit this record occasionally. Well, I think I want to listen to more of the band itself and where it went. I'm curious more than
there's anything. There's another album that they went and did. The studio album they went and did after that one. I'm trying to remember what the hell it's called.
Oh, well, the first record is called what? Oh God, I had it here and I lost it. The inner mounting flame.
Yeah.
And Birds mounting. Of Fire. So there's a theme there.
Visions of the Emerald Beyond.
Yeah, these guys have fun naming things. And then apparently at some point there's like some vocals and stuff get involved. So I'd be curious to hear some of that. So I think
there's a little bit on that end on the Visions of the Emerald Beyond. There's like the first track that's on that one has like this weird, oh God. And it's even me talking about Mahavishnu Orchestra. It's fucking weird. It's weird. But it's got like this weird like chordal thing happening in it. But I think the song is in 5/4 or some shit. Anyways, weird.
All right. Well, like that's, yeah. I think that's where I'm at now. I didn't go to Discogs and be like, oh, what's this record selling for? I'm going to put it on my list. Not because I was like, oh, this is awful. Like, cause it, you know what? Like at no point was it not interesting. Mm. And that's kind of at the very least what I want from, you know, music is, especially when I'm trying to, you know, kind of bring back the days of, I'm not, you know, it's not out of a nostalgia thing. It's just that I don't want music to be disposable. You know, I don't want it to just be like I want to relive those days of when you had ownership over the stuff you listened to, because, you know, I it just, you got engaged. Like I said, like, you like a record like this that you found was such a mystery for such a long time, and eventually you bred some familiarity with it, and that's what we all used to do, man. Sometimes you just take a chance on an album, but you spent your whole fucking allowance on it, so you're gonna listen to it a dozen times and try and like it because it's all you had.
That's right, and sometimes it's the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, and that's shit happens.
By the way, since we're talking about music, the new Mortal Kombat music is subtly brings in elements of the original techno soundtrack in like the score, in like an orchestral score.
They like phrase and it.
it's kind of badass. It's kind of cool. Well, right on, man. Thanks so much for joining us today. I don't know if anybody else has any more 2 cents that they want to put in about anything. Anything for the Peanut Gallery or.
I thought it was a bold and awesome choice and something totally different that we had now.
Totally.
And I appreciated that.
Yeah. Good. And like I said, very niche. So I'm not surprised that there aren't a bunch of people going like, oh, dude, got to buy it. Like, I got to talk about this record. But yeah, very cool pick because it's not every day, you know, like we go that far out of the wheelhouse, you know, or out of the box. Do you have anything you want to plug, man? Like, you're all booked up for tattoos and
shit. No, come get tattooed by me. Come give me all your money.
what about you got, like I said earlier, you got some tattoos, you got some tunes online. Where can people find those?
I do. I got some stuff on SoundCloud, but I've got one album on Bandcamp, just Chris Awanyak. If you look me up on Bandcamp, I got an album on there. It's kind of like a ambient doomy jazz kind of thing. It's also pretty niche.
Well, I listened but to your "Thank You for Being a Friend" track on there.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, well, I listened to actually a bunch of your tracks, but that was the first one that I heard, and
I got my dog. That's my dog on there too.
Oh, right. Yeah. are you talking about B. Arthur? Or...
No, my actual dog is on there. Yeah, my dog.
She's my dog.
She's everybody's dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Okay. Well, you know where you can find us. You can find us all over the interwebs. Charlie, where can people find us?
People can find us at l2lpodcast.com.
Yeah. That's where you can, you know, follow, like, subscribe, whatever you want to do. Social media, wherever you listen to podcasts, all that sort of stuff. Just go to that. What was that again, Charlie?
L2Lpodcast.com.
Hell yeah. And just, you know, tell us that we don't know what we're talking about. We're not qualified to do this at all. And that you should come on and tell us what's what.
When did we get a .com?
We've had it for a while.
Oh, cool.
I know, but for like the last handful of episodes at the end, it's l2lpodcast.com.
It sure shrinks everything down, so you don't have to say
remember
all that
when
other
I was
stuff.
Saying www.l2lpodcast.com?
Yes. Now I do remember.
But Naomi's still living in the 90s, so she's blown away by this whole .com thing.
I'm ready. I'm so in the 90s. I have a phone number bubble. For you to call
There's
us.
There's a landline. It's actually Naomi's home phone number.
I have a landline, and I'd like you to leave me a message on the answering machine. You guys got to call us at 780-851-8785. Long-distance charges may apply. Leave us a voicemail. Do it.
Hell yeah.
Boom.
And like I say 100 million times in every show, but if I don't say it, you guys don't do it. Patreon.com/learningtolisten. That's like I said, man, that's where all the hot goss really is. You get episodes early, unedited, or just raw dogging them. No protection. You guys want to relive your glory days of raw dogging with no protection, right? So Patreon.com/learningtolisten. Do we have a PG-13 or anything on the front of it? We put explicit, right?
We should use R more often.
It's fine.
Yeah. And then we got some personal plugs. Charlie, plug away.
Hey, you know what? If you like this show, you can help us out by picking up some merch. Just go to oldmandesign.com and get you some L2L podcast merch. Or maybe you want a t-shirt that's got a plague doctor on it. I can do that for you. Just oldmandesign.com. We'll get you sorted.
Right on. Naomi, what do you got going on?
I just love how he says that. I don't know. Okay, so I have another podcast called Dope Nostalgia. I already told you who was going to be on last week, and I'm just going to repeat it again because it's so exciting. Yeah. Biff Naked is going to be on the show.
Boom. Oh!
Yeah, hell she's yeah. on the show, coming right up.
Man, I did a tour with her back in the day.
Did you really?
Yeah, my band did a tour with her back in the day. That's fucking
she
rad.
She is so great. Yeah.
So nice. It was a she's thrill. Rad.
Yeah.
Right on, Mel. Hell yeah. Thanks once again, Chris.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, this is a real fun chat. And okay, so we do make our guests do one last thing before we let them go, let them off the hook. So all you got to do for us is you got to wrap this whole thing up by just saying rap, rap, rap it up.
Rap, rap, rap it up.
Boom.
I thought we were about raw dogging now.
The 1990s. The music was fun.
Yeah.
And then it got really dark for a while, a little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else. The ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and New Jack Swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? Special guests will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting a move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at NostalgiaDope. Or you can find us on Instagram at dope_nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at dopenostalgiapodcast@gmail.com.